A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fiction or alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
And welcome back, all you Earth Prime citizens. I know you have no idea what's going on. But you have wandered into our roundtable of Crisis on Infinite Earths, Part 4 and 5. I'm so glad that you're here. We're going to talk about Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Get everybody's theories on how Palpatine came back. No, wait, what? Why are we here? What are we?
I haven't seen that movie.
Spoilers!
It's cool.
No. We're going to talk about what we thought of parts 4 and 5 and this whole here crossover as a whole. I am John, a.k.a. the Silver Vox, co-host of Made of Steel, a Supergirl podcast for the podcast network known as Golden Spiral Media. Let's go around the table to tell you who's here. Go, X-Force.
This is Jeff, X-Force 11, representing the Gotham contingent here on the round table.
Miss Jess.
And this is Harley Quinn from Tomorrow's Legends, crashing another GSM crossover once again.
Fantastic. We love it. We love it.
Absolutely love it.
Yes. And who's that?
This is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Silver Vox, do you think they even remember that we've done this before?
I don't know what you're talking about. And we have Arrow Squad represented.
Yes. Hi, I'm Cammie and Ray, and I'm here representing Arrow Squad. And I'm surrounded also, John, by a couple empty chairs at this round table. Who are we missing?
Yes, we are missing your cohort and Jess's cohort, Martin the Flash. And we're also missing our Flash representative, Professor Chris, but hopefully he will join us as we get going because, hey, this was his idea. And I want that recorded.
If the crossover taught us anything, That sometimes at the end there's some empty chairs and you never know when they're going to be filled again.
This is true. All right. We are going to talk about parts 4 and 5 of Crossover. Part 4. This was a tough one. This was really, really tough. I don't know how we get around it. I think we need to really start at the end and maybe work our way back, because I feel like this ending was such a critical piece to not only this crossover, but to Arrow and to everything. So I do want to hear from everybody, but let's start with Cammy. The fight at the end, Oliver's sacrifice with the Anti-Monitor and his passing number 2. Do we feel like that Oliver's passing on such an epic universe dependent scale was what he needed, or does that take away from all of the Arrow faithful, to put it in another way? So, Cammy, what do you think?
Well, to answer it quickly first, I will say it took away, I think, from the goal of Arrow, which was always to protect Star City or Starling City. And I think I mentioned this in the last crossover roundtable. With each of our heroes, there is a defined world around it. So if you take Batman as a classic example, there is this defined world of Gotham around him, such that it does not mean anything different to a Batman viewer to see the world in crisis versus seeing Gotham in crisis. Mm-hmm. Because within our comic book world, the world is what we define it as. And as an Arrow viewer, that was defined as Star City.
Yeah.
For a Legends viewer, it's a little bit different. You have a broader world, and it can even cross time. So it's a you know, there's a little bit more malleable universe shaping to be done in there. But as an Arrow viewer, it doesn't actually change the stakes for me to create infinite universes, because we already saw Oliver as the central guardian of what we were told was the world. And while the world around can change, him dying for the world, if you will, does not change him or our experience as a viewer. Hmm. I would have preferred to see when he does pass, whether it be here, whether it be at a Sunday night airing of a Supergirl crossover before Christmas, or whether it be the actual end of the show, I wanted to see him pass protecting his Star City, because that was his world. Mm-hmm. And regardless of them trying to make it bigger, it doesn't actually, for the purpose of a plot, make it bigger for me.
Yeah, I thought the president's wrapping of that, like, just didn't give it the justice that it was due. Yeah, I don't know. Jeff, what do you think?
I don't know. For me, it was just hard, because it's hard in the context, because you know that there are several other episodes of Arrow left. And so he's already died once in the crossover, and this second time here, it just made it lack some of the weight that you would normally expect it to do. And not having his friends and family around him made it hard as well. We got that appreciation from the group later on, but I think it just fell a little flat for me. And that first episode that back from the break is just a little hard, because I felt like we just lost so much momentum from the previous three with that break. And that episode would have been better if we were connected, but that episode was just weak. And part of it was just the lack of weight, I guess, I felt of Oliver's passing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Harley?
Yeah, I'm actually going to disagree with that a little bit. This is shocking to everyone, including me, but I actually felt like there was that weight associated with his death the second time around as the Spectre character, because of the symbolism and everything that they were working to do with his sacrifice and with his death. Whereas the first death in the first episode, I felt almost betrayed his character, because it was going against lessons he had literally just learned on Arrow. Mm-hmm. However, I felt like this particular sacrifice was playing into, one, the greater mission that the Monitor had set forth for him all along and had told him would be coming and was trying to prepare him for, as we're trying to figure out how a man with a bow and arrow can literally save the multiverse. And I felt that it was symbolic, because Stephen Amell as Oliver Queen is what started this wonderful universe that we even have today. So I felt like them killing his character to basically rebirth that universe worked really well for me.
Okay. Interesting. Well, you know, and I can make the case either way. You know, was it appropriate on such an epic scale, or could it be more appropriate on the Star City scale? And I appreciate the viewpoints that you guys bring here. So the Anti-Monitor, I'm skipping to part five here for just a minute, but the Anti-Monitor says that it doesn't matter that basically kind of what went down at the end of episode four or part four, because Destiny would have brought him back no matter what. I kind of took that to mean, like, I have many doppelgangers and one of us would have, you know, would have come back. Did that take away for you guys what Oliver was trying to accomplish?
I'll jump in here. I think even just mixing in the idea of Destiny, which is very present in this storyline, as it should be, it's kind of integral, even when unspoken, in the comic version of the storyline. It feels a bit far from the sort of foundation of Arrow, in that Oliver is choosing to go against his destiny on Arrow. And in fact, in the few areas of the Arrow comic lore where there is a bit of destiny, again, despite it being sometimes unsaid. A great example of that, of course, is Green Arrow and Black Canary. They are destined in the comics, and the show subverts that. Mm-hmm. The show avoids this idea of destiny driving your actions and pushes Oliver to hard places where he has to take ownership of his actions, as do the other characters, as being responsible for certain outcomes. They hold his feet to the fire and the rest of the vigilantes' feet to the fire for ethical considerations that other heroes often don't have to consider. So holding characters without cause, getting involved in law enforcement and subverting law enforcement, we see some of that sort of being questioned from a good place, where a character may be a foil for Oliver and team, but they are not inherently wrong. So bringing back in this idea of destiny and his death, I didn't mind it, and I appreciated that while all of these worlds spun out of Arrow, Arrow was then responsible for merging them all back together, and that was poetic and nice. I didn't necessarily, as a first and foremost Arrow viewer, love Destiny being brought back into it.
Mm-hmm. Butterfly, what do you think?
I really appreciate this second chance we got here on for Oliver's ending, and I hope that it's really not an ending, and he'll be able to contribute to the universe, possibly as a Spectre. Maybe Spectre is more, it seems like what I've read so far, it seems like the Spectre is more of an immortal character, so I'm hoping that that means that the essence of what is Oliver will still be around for us, and we'll be able to experience him in different ways as this universe goes on, because he built this universe. So I would like to see his influence continue with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's get back to part four. I need some help with the whole standing in a line, staring while
the Care Bear stare.
While the Anti-Monitor and Oliver duke this out. What is happening here?
If you take the lines that they state like verbatim, I mean, there's only one page left of the Book of Destiny. It's the little page that has everybody's paragon designation listed out. And I guess they're focusing, because that's the only way to properly use the Book of Destiny. I don't know. That was a bit hokey.
And it was
just not only did I love your explanation, I loved that it was the Legends person who was willing to come in and be like, "Well, guys, I got this one. I'm gonna hold down the fort on this."
Look, I'm used to the goofy, the weird, and the let's just do some random stuff and see what sticks. So, you know, it's all I got, y'all. It's all I got.
Jeff, what do you think?
I don't know. I just think that they didn't have enough of the depth and the the characters and the things that they used in the comics to have a real battle like it appeared in the comics. Mm-hmm. And so they were bent on these paragons, but yet I think they could have done that in a better way of, whether it's giving us flashbacks of them thinking and some type of image graphic of some type of force coming out. I mean, something other than them just sitting there looking,
I was expecting an effect.
Yes, I was expecting an effect too. Some type of, let's think about what makes them the paragon of that particular thing. Give us a short flash of what they're thinking about, like we saw with the 90s Flash, so that when that effect happens, it gives some weight, some gravitas, but it just didn't happen. So I just don't know. That was just poor.
I would have settled for the Care Bear stare in that moment, literally just any sort of color coming out of each of them.
Yes.
Okay. So Cammy brings up a really great point that I want to come back to. She was talking about how all of our heroes are built in kind of these, the show Bible, if you will, of, okay, here's the parameters of these worlds, of these characters, of their settings and their surroundings and their powers and so on and so forth. And we know it's comics. We know things are going to be added in and tied out and, you know, that kind of a thing all the time. I was actually surprised that, because I asked Chris in the last, you know, crossover, what role does Flash have left? And didn't even think about that the whole Speed Force would be, would supersede even wiping out the multiverse. Like, was that just convenience or?
I think to speak to that is it would have ended eventually, but I think because of the nature of the Speed Force and it being, you know, faster than other things and so universal, one of those forces of this comic book world, that its time was extended beyond what it would normally be. And that's why we got to see him use his abilities to gather everybody up safely. So to me, I don't think it was that much of a stretch to see them use that as a way to connect everybody safely. So I'm glad it gave him extra weight, because I felt like a lot of this season just felt like the weight on Barry of knowing that he was going to die in Crisis. And it, like I said, in the last crossover, I felt like it was taking away from Oliver this season. But here we get to see him use his skills and abilities in the Speed Force to contribute in a way that he wasn't thinking about it. And I enjoyed getting to see his frustration at the beginning of the episode of trying to get out and to get somewhere else, and how hard he was working to get around it. So I appreciated those aspects of it.
The dark circles were interesting. So, all right. Anybody else? Speed Force commentary?
I mean, I'm with Jeff. I kind of bought that it existed outside of space and time. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I live in the Legends sandbox, where the temporal zone, the place where they spend all of their time, is also outside of space and time, including the vanishing point where they were all kind of conveniently stationed. So I thought it worked well, and it made sense, because if you have no true universe, at least universe that like we can interact with as normal matter to get to, you need something to sort of bridge that gap and to find a way to bridge between universes, which we know that the Speed Force is capable of doing. So it made sense to me.
Okay.
I completely agree. And I will only add that I compared it in my head to all of the characters of The Good Place living inside of Janet when necessary.
I got that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Not seen that show.
All right. Let's, unless there's anything that anybody just wants to scream and shout about part four, let's concentrate some time on part five. Bebo.
Would you look at the time? I suddenly...
I was so afraid. Like, as soon as I seen Bebo, I was like, oh no, everybody's grade is dropping right now.
My only consolation was that Bebo was an illusion the entire time. It was not a real Bebo, thankfully.
I did appreciate everyone, like, at the same time responding, is this happening?
Yes. I think one of my favorite parts of that episode occurred in the Arrow Cave, with the entire Arrow cast going, is this for real? Like, this is normal?
Is this what a crossover is normally like?
Sort of.
Yes, and not exactly. All right, so the Paragons are under attack. That's the premise of part five. We come to the realization that we've all been kind of sandwiched into the same Earth Prime, right? And Jean goes around and sort of brings everybody up to speed. There were several noticeable people who were not present. And I guess the first one that really comes to mind is Cisco from The Flash. Another one that Justine and I talked about a little while ago was Brainy, who was not, who's inconspicuous, gone. I couldn't really think of anybody from Arrow, but Cammy, I'm assuming we're thinking that the kids have moved back to 2040. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, what all of these characters have in common is that it's like all the smart characters.
Yeah.
So they just can't, like, what are you going to do? Have Cisco, Brainy, and William on there being like, hey, guys, so there's a giant blue teddy, you know, like for hand waving plot reasons. They're just hand waving plot reasons, not there, you know. But yes, next week on Arrow, or in this case, pretty much this week, so on Tuesday, whatever, they have the Green Arrow and Black Canary, Green Arrow and the Canaries episode, whatever they're calling it, which is center. It's a backdoor spinoff for our 2040 kids. Yeah. So they kind of had to be distanced by the end of this crossover such that they can suddenly do this jump time forward situation. Mia's engaged, one of the Diggle boys. It's just a very different setting. They couldn't really be tied into the end of the crossover at that point.
I think they're going to do, and by think, I mean, I know, they're going to do a resetting and redressing of every single show. Like the upcoming Legends show on Tuesday is entitled Meet the Legends. And it's all about how the Legends have become like world famous. And, you know, like Ray and Sarah and Mick, the three characters that were notably in the crossover, whereas the rest of our cast was not, are going to be the confused ones and trying to struggle with how to move on from this crisis. Whereas the others are just like, this is great. Like, we're celebrities. Or, you know, so my reading of the synopsis and articles out on the interwebs have informed me. So I think it'll be interesting. I know that Supergirl, from what I understand, is doing something similar because now you have Lex Luthor on your universe, who was, if I correct me if I am wrong, since I did not watch this show, he was previously dead, and now he has won the Nobel Peace Prize and, like, controls everything.
He was previously dead. You're right.
Yes. Yeah, and that's, like, not how it was, right? So no. I'm only going to assume they're going to have to do something similar on each of the shows where we come back and it's the setting of, hey, here's our new universe, including the here's where Green Arrow is going. So,
Do we think that there are doppelgangers anymore?
I do not, personally. I think what they've set up is that doppelgangers are kind of gone.
Yeah. From everything that I have seen and the impression that I got is Earth Prime contains all of the CW shows, and there's not particularly, you know, Earth 2 doppelgangers and Earth 3 in that sense. The other Earths that exist in this multiverse are other DC properties like Titans and Swamp Thing and the movies. There's not what we have seen in the past few years of, okay, this version of Barry over here and this version of Cisco over here. Those are all condensed down to one Earth, but the other DC properties are out there, Smallville and things like that, but those are in different universes. But anything that we have seen previous have been all condensed down to Earth Prime.
So if I'm hearing you right, so the characters that we've built and grown on Earth 2, like from The Flash or Arrow, I mean, I know Black Siren came over to Earth Prime, right? But like for all the characters we built on Flash, we think they're just gone?
I think some where it's going to make sense to plot will reappear as their Earth Prime version. And I think others were, they're just going to move on from, like, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the only Wells is Nash Wells now. We're not going to have a Harry. We're not going to have the revolving door of Harrison Wells and Shirley and all of this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's going to be interesting. What they did in the comics is you had the Prime Earth, but then you had Earth 2, which was anybody in the golden age of the DC heroes. So I think that's where some of the play might come in, but it's just going to be totally different. I just think it's going to be a way to do a reset on having these infinite things. Now, we may see that there are other Earths out there, but I think it's just a way of doing a reset and bringing everybody together. And I think they did a fairly good job of in this episode of showing that dismay of all these people being on one Earth and working it. In my mind, you know, other people may have a different opinion about everybody being on the same Earth now, but I think they did a fair job of pulling everybody in and showing, okay, things are really different because we're on the same Earth.
Okay. So, Jess, I was really impressed with the prominence of Sarah Lance throughout this crossover. I really thought they brought her to the forefront, made mm-hmm. her a real leader on this team of all the different crossover folks. I was really glad to see it. I'll say the same thing about Supergirl, but talk to me about how what you thought about the kind of bringing Sarah to the forefront.
Yeah, no, I loved it. And I think that they really kind of set her up to maybe not be an Oliver replacement, because I don't think we're getting an Oliver replacement. And I think that was, you know, a point of a lot of this, especially with the setup for the Justice League at the end. But I loved that she was kind of stepping in, and where leadership was very clearly needed, she's a seasoned leader, and she was leading the team and, you know, just ready to kind of jump in and take those reins and be like, no, you know, I need Supergirl, I need you to do this. Barry, I need you to do this. And that's something that she's very good at. It's something she's had to hone over the last few years over on Legends. And I think it was nice to see that in the crossover. Mm-hmm. And especially, I loved that heart-to-heart scene that her and Barry had. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it was necessarily setting them up to be like, okay, you know, Sarah's the new Oliver. She's, you know, she's now going to be like everyone's leader that everyone looks to. Like, I don't think so. I think that scene between her and Barry kind of just solidified that they're almost like the two like seasoned characters and the wisest of the two. And I liked that they were able to go back and forth and kind of lean on each other. And so that they, you know, kind of to have that dynamic of not being able to go to Oliver, but they can now go to each other. And I think everybody else can go to them as well. So I like that.
Absolutely. Yes.
I agree with that.
So, Justina, in the same way, I think this was as much Supergirl's crossover as it was anybody else's. The setup in the beginning and at the end, I really feel like kind of were the bookends of kind of everything that happened there in the middle. I was really pleased to see her prominent role throughout this. What you and I have not talked about this anywhere else. What did you think about the role that they put Supergirl in throughout this crossover?
I was so glad for it, because in crossovers past, she's only been in a supporting role. And I understand that, like, not everybody can be a star all the time in these big crossover events, but she had that moment in episode 5 where, you know, I thought that she was going to give her life to get rid of the anti-monitor, and I knew that she would do it. She would do it to give hope to the world. Like, I just really love that the writers presented us with a story that put her in a more central role this time, because it was time to do that, and it was very, very enjoyable.
Nice. So Kimmy, Renee is going to go fight alongside everybody else, and he's got his guns blazing. Mm-hmm. My question is, not all of them are bulletproof, right? Not all of our heroes.
Right.
Like,
some of our heroes come from the streets, no meta abilities, still get grumpy about time travel.
Yeah. And he was just going to start shooting. Thankfully, he didn't have to a whole lot, but I thought, man, that's dangerous.
Yeah. Renee is quite a, you know, spitfire, if you will. And I think it was interesting to see as Arrow characters were pulled in, they were, and I don't mean this in a bad way, they were a little bit of an amalgamation of multiple characters kind of rolled into one. Mm-hmm. So if you, those who, you know, watch Arrow or are super familiar with it, you know, you see Dinah and Renee suddenly showing up. And they weren't really the more nuanced versions of Dinah and Renee. They were general placeholders for here's how the Arrow team as a whole would respond to things. While they were their own characters, you see, you know, people slinging guns on Arrow, not just Renee. Diggle also shoots. And you see people, you know, kind of in response to meta things or time travel or space travel or whatever, kind of cocking one eyebrow and questioning it and, you know, wondering if maybe there's a different way or if everything's really real. And we see Dinah kind of holding down the fort on that approach, but that's not always just Dinah there. So they were, I would say they were representing the show as a whole more than their individual characters.
So I have a question for you, Cammy. Do you think, and I guess we'll learn this week, do you think because of this universe merge that that we will have a canary cry back with Dinah?
I do think they're going to return that to her. I don't know if we'll see it in the last two episodes of Arrow. I think we will see it for sure in the spinoff. So we have two more episodes of Arrow, but one, the next one that's coming up in a couple days, is the backdoor pilot for a spinoff that Dinah will be on. And I think almost every canary other than Sarah will be on as well. And I'm sure Sarah will show up on the show at some point in some sort of crossover. But we've had, a good many canaries on Arrow at this point. And I think all of them will have some version of a cry, which will probably, you know, change over time as well on our spinoff. I think the one constant, which I thought was interesting because you were talking earlier and made some really good points, both you and Jess, about Sarah being the replacement Oliver. And I think in the context of the crossover, she did become that a bit. But in the context of Arrow, Oliver handed the mantle over to Mia. And in a very real sense, she is now the new Green Arrow. She is the title Green Arrow in the Green Arrow and Canaries spinoff. And that will be interesting to see, because while we have a whole bunch of now seasoned canaries with different cries, and as you're suspecting, cries will probably continue to change and come up for them, it's entirely new on our show to truly have somebody carry the Green Arrow mantle for more than just, you know, an episode or two like Roy and Diggle did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lots of crossovers. Do we see this in our show's futures from here? What do we think?
I think we are going to get to see what a little bit of what we saw in this episode with Supergirl and Barry. We're going to see smaller team ups. We're going to get to see The Brave and the Bold, where Supergirl and Batwoman are going to team up. We're going to see smaller team ups and not the world shaking ones that we're used to. And I think that's good. We need to build back up, because honestly, this one was uneven in a lot of ways, and not my favorite out of all of them so far. But I think it's going to give us the opportunity to have what's going to feel more natural, where, okay, we're having an issue and I'm going to call in, you know, my buddy over here that knows how to do this and to give me a hand, so that it doesn't have to feel like, you know, world shaking in order to call in help. So I think it's going to feel more organic. And I think that is going to be a little bit better in the type of things. And because of Green Arrow and the Canaries being in the future, that kind of exempts them out from having to deal with some of that we're used to. But I think for everybody else, I think it's going to feel more organic than it has in the past.
Yeah, we won't have to have any plot device ways to get together. Like we won't have to overcome that hurdle of how did they even get to each other's earth so fast. Like we're taking out that variable where they can just call on each other. And I like how this crossover and many of our crossovers highlight different strengths of our different heroes and just proves the point that everybody's not strong in everything. And sometimes you have to lean on your friends to fill in your weaknesses. So I'm looking forward to hopefully a lot of mini crossovers and superhero team ups.
Yeah, and it already kind of sounded like that's what they were trying to set up, because when we're first introduced to this concept with Weather Witch kind of showing up on Supergirl's territory, you know, and Barry comes rushing, he's like, oh, yeah, this is one of mine. And then it's kind of like, wait, what are you doing here? You know, like that kind of thing. We're introduced at that time to the concept that this sort of thing happens all the time. You know, even the legends get involved. You know, was it Marv Wolfman got involved in that scene, which is kind of funny. And he's like, yeah, you guys are together all the time. Usually there's a couple legends with you, you know, that whole thing. So I think we'll start to see more of the mini crossovers, which could be a lot of fun. And they did it well in the early seasons. And I think it'll be fun to do that some more now.
So, Jeff, one of our feedbackers brought up the question, how does Stargirl fit into all this? Like, if she's on a different Earth, does she just sort of, do you think we just bring her into Earth Prime? Like, how does the future move forward with building new characters and new storylines?
Yeah, that one's going to be weird, because that show was originally designed only for the DC streaming service, and now it's going to be both places, both the DC streaming service and the CW. It is a different Earth. It is a different Justice Society than we have seen in the CW verse. So I think right now for season one, it's going to be they're going to be separate. But I think maybe down the road they'll have a way to come into our universe. But I think that's going to be a little further on, because she's going to be so brand new at learning her abilities that she has and the group that she's gathering around her. I think their season one is going to be separate, and then they'll start making some moves for some crossovers. But it is very much a Justice Society show and a throwback classic feel. So I think it will be very different. So I think they're going to give them a season just to feel things out and build that world before they try to build some crossovers in.
Was that Legends did the JSA, don't forget.
That the streaming services Swamp Thing? Was that him?
Yes, which is... Okay. That show was excellent, and it's just a shame that the behind the scenes streaming rights and money caused that to not continue on, because I think they were doing a great job, a very dark version. But it was nice of them to actually show that, you know, it exists out there. So it maybe gives you some hope for down the road. Who knows?
All right. Yes or no, everybody. Can we take Tyler Hoechlin seriously as Superman anymore? go.
I'm gonna be positive here for a second. I'll deny this ever happened. This is not being recorded. You didn't hear this. I think we can, because I think they have set this up in such a way that they've acknowledged there are many Supermans, Supermen, if you will. There are many, you know, they've even gone so far as, you know, they brought Ezra Miller on here. So they've acknowledged, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, both that there are, you know, DC TV and DCEU superheroes that parallel each other. They've really acknowledged as much as they can that this is just one incarnation. And as this one incarnation, I think we can, I mean, not take him seriously in that this is, you know, DC, CW, right? But allow him to join our lineup of heroes. Where it starts to push the line of judgment for me is this, the idea of doing right now in this very present moment for TV, the Superman spinoff for him specifically. I'm not so sure that this is the right TV ecosystem at this point for it, but I'm willing to see where it goes.
All right. Justina, what do you think?
I think we can give him a chance. I think it could be really, I'm really looking forward to seeing more of both Tyler Hoechlin and Elizabeth Tulloch in some Adventures of Superboy. I'm pretty excited.
Boys.
Yeah, now there's two of them, so double trouble there.
Jeff?
I will have to see. I mean, we have only seen him in the context of the crossovers and on Supergirl. We have not really and truly gotten to see his life. And I think we're going to have to give it a try. It will definitely be a different feel with a family dynamic of him raising these twins and being a superhero at the same time. I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic. They have a comic line right now that is dealing with Superman and his son and Batman and his son. They can't really do that in this universe, but it will be interesting to see. So I'm tentatively going to say that I think it can work. I just think it all depends on the writing, and they need to maybe key up the family dynamic over some of what they're doing on Supergirl, and just make it different in that light of, okay, this is the aspect of being a hero that we're going to look at. This married life, married with two kids, how do you save the world and take care of your two kids and make sure that they're not getting into trouble, and showing them how to navigate the world with powers and abilities as young kids. And so I think they have ground to do that. It's just whether the writing and the production will go in that route. We just have to wait and see.
As opposed to becoming like another That's So Raven, Wizards of Waverly Place type of magic family show.
So, Jess, my original question was just simply superficial. It was really difficult to line him up against Brandon Routh and Tom Welling, right? And I mean, he just looked like he was so out of place. That's, you know, I'm asking superficially. Can we take him seriously?
I prefer Brandon Routh, I'm just going to say.
There we go. All right. So, Cammie, they brought Sarah back to us. Baby Sarah.
Yes.
I was like, hang on. Shouldn't that be my question? Just kidding.
Was that an apology? Was that, do we expect any other fundamental changes because of this merging? I mean, how do you take that?
I'm going to take that as close to an apology we're going to get directly from Barry Allen to all members of the Arrowcast. And I'm thrilled that Baby Sarah is back. Yes, I think of all of the, you know, you started to touch on families, of all the families kind of shortchanged by this crossover, I would say, and all crossovers, quite frankly, the Diggle family has really been put through it. They are perhaps the most cornerstone Arrow feature, and thus are the most out of place and often left out of crossovers. There is nothing meta about them. There is nothing magic about them. They are extremely grounded. So when something, you know, Barry's time traveling back at the time that Baby Sarah was erased was pretty far out there for this universe. I know it doesn't seem like it now as we've become more acclimated to magic and time travel and all of this legend stuff. But back then, that was pretty far out there. And to have one of the Diggle family members erased was a pretty big deal to, you know, Arrow and them. Returning that has been key because she is then able to return as a grown-up character in our 2040 spinoff. So that actually has some pretty heavy implications, and she will, not to spoil everyone, but she does. There is a grown-up, not baby Sarah, that will appear and join her, you know, now two brothers, and we have some other, you know, pieces of retconning that is allowing the cast of that spinoff to fill out. So I appreciated that, not just because of the sort of symbolic gesture, but also because that has some real implications on our universe.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I mean, I can't even believe it. Here in a couple of weeks, we are saying farewell to Arrow. I mean, I just can't. It's difficult for me to summarize what, you know, 7.5 years of this show has produced, because we all sit here around this table as products of Arrow, right? I mean, if we just come down to it, we are all here because of Arrow. Tell me what you think of this DC universe moving forward without that cornerstone there. Because I honestly don't think that Green Arrow and the Canaries takes the same place of gravitas and just cornerstone fundamental foundation of this universe anymore. So what does it look like to you guys moving forward?
Personally, I don't think they can't. And I don't think they are. They're not going to try to make Green Arrow and the Canaries fill that same role. You just can't. I think they will probably pass that torch on to Flash, since it's the next one down the line. I think that there will always be that hole there. I think we will see Oliver in different ways. I think that chair will not always be vacant at the Hall of Justice. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate that, because I don't know that we've necessarily seen something like this in TV before, that you had one show that spun out so many and then have it close down, and that they were so interrelated. So it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate that. And I think there's going to be some stumbling, and I think there's going to be some adapting. But you've just got to realize that, you know, this world is going to be different without Arrow in it. And as somebody who, like you said, who's watched it from the beginning, who's left feedback about Arrow since the beginning, it is going to be hard not having that show on and that cast of characters on screen every week. But I think we can respect what the show has done, and we can take those principles, and we can have our heroes hearken back to lessons that they learn from times with Ollie and apply that to their lives. So it's going to be interesting to see them navigate this.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. And I think what they were kind of trying to accomplish with parts 4 and 5 was to say, hey, we're recognizing that the show is ending, that it was the foundation, it was the beginning. But with this end, there is another beginning. And I think what they're going to try to do is to better even out the playing field between all of the shows. I mean, I think if we wanted to look to something as the cornerstone, it would logically fall to the Flash. But I think that maybe they would do a disservice not only to Arrow, but to the entire universe of trying to replace someone and put someone into, you know, that spot. So I think there is a lot of symbolism throughout both of those episodes, and kind of what they did and how they're trying to recreate the universe through Oliver's death and through the end of Arrow. And I think the introduction of the Justice League table at the end was very symbolic, a very Knights of the Round Table feel, that there's not a head to this table. There's not a quote leader, a single person that needs to take on the reins of this universe. We're all in it together. Hmm. And that's where I feel
good point.
They're with it and what they're trying to do.
Nice.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there is sort of a sense of equality across the leads of each show. And while each show does have a leader of their team, even shows that are a bit more ensemble-esque like Legends, you still do have, you have Sarah for Legends, you have Barry for Flash, and you have Kara for Supergirl, and it, you know, Batwoman for Batwoman, Kate for Batwoman, whichever. I think that moving forward, where it could become difficult is that I think they now have a closed universe, not just in the sense that it's all merged and they're all on the same playing field, but that I do not expect they will spin off more shows or more superheroes, or if they do, it will not be successful. Every time they have spun off a superhero, it has in some way been tied back to the root of Arrow, even when in a crossover. Obviously, for the first few ones, both for Legends and for Flash, it was directly spun out of Arrow, not even just a crossover. Arrow has now relinquished its last spinoff of itself, right? I don't think this universe would be able to do another. So we now have a limited set. And when one dies, not literally within the universe necessarily, but the show may end or a team may fold the way Arrow folded, that will then slowly collapse this one last universe. They don't have another one to lean on. And I do not think they could sustain another spinoff of a lead.
So pushing back just a little bit, what about like Black Lightning, not tied to Arrow and so far has been pretty successful?
I don't think that Black Lightning prefers, like, they don't prefer to see themselves as an Arrowverse show. And they've been asked about that, both in terms of being in crossovers, which of course we see for the first time in this crossover, and in terms of having characters on their show. The cast and I think creatives involved have expressed preference of potentially having guests on their show rather than going out for crossovers regularly. That's possibly why they do take a smaller role in this crossover. They are quite separate from the Arrowverse. If they do spinoffs of the Black Lightning verse, that's certainly possible, but that would not be, I would not see that as an Arrowverse spinoff. They are by choice their own entity.
Okay. Even down to filming, they film down here in Atlanta, so yeah, crossover opportunities are extremely limited.
Justina, what do you think? What does the future look like?
I think that, like we saw in one of the final scenes with the Eternal Flame of Oliver, I think we'll be seeing, even though I do agree with Cammy, I don't think that there'll be any more spinoffs that could really be called Arrow spinoffs. I do think that as our shows continue, and it would really be beneficial for any fans coming in late to go back and watch Arrow and see where all this comes from, because I think there's going to be a lot of references and sort of shadows of Oliver and the team and what Arrow has brought to this universe for many years to come, as the different shows will probably have, you know, several more seasons. And I think we'll be seeing little effects and little nods and little Easter eggs for a very, very long time, to the point where people might want to go back and see where it came from and be like, oh, now that reference makes sense in that one, because I think they will always honor Arrow as long as this universe exists, because it is the Arrowverse after all.
Very nice. All right. Let's wrap it up. The best and worst of parts 4 and 5. Cammy.
Best is Oliver's Spectre costume, which is, I posit, the best costume he's worn in all of Arrow. Convince me I'm wrong. Worst is, oh, I'm so sorry. First of all, I'm a bleeding heart feminist, but I have to say the throw like a girl line made me cringe in real life. It's going to go down in history right up there with the time that they had a real person show up in a, I think it was like the Bachelorette crossover or something awful like that, and say the word hashtag feminism. They said hashtag followed by feminism. Someone wrote that and it got said in this universe. Well, they've matched it. We now have throw like a girl. I'm really sorry.
All right. Jeff, what do you say? Best and worst.
For me, I think the best was just really the ending scene with the Hall of Justice and just recognizing all that the group had gone through together and that missing piece that with Arrow not being there, the Green Arrow not being there. I think that was the best for me, just the childhood memories of the Super Friends and things like that. But just really that team being together in a real way and it being a beginning, something that we've hoped for a long time. The worst, I think the stand against the anti-monitor, the think on, you know, your, whatever, the paragons, I think that was the worst for me. So
there you go. See, that table can't be complete to me without a chair for Wonder Woman and for Aquaman and for Green Lantern. I mean, there needs to, like, it truly can't be the Super Friends without.
Those are some expensive rights you're listing.
Yeah. You know. Okay. Justina, what do you think? Best and worst?
Well, worst was that really random bank robbery scene that I was just like, we could spend some time doing something else rather than this. Like, it was related to the Bebo, which also didn't make any sense. I was just totally over that part. And the best part for me was some of the lines, some of the heartfelt lines about how memories connect us. And in particular, Sarah talking about Oliver as being a person that knew her before she got on that boat and how that boat shaped her destiny. And then at the beginning of the crossover, when Sarah tells Oliver, you know, I've seen you as the playboy, I've seen you as the vigilante, I've seen you as the father, just to see these two characters. I mean, we meet Sarah in the pilot of Arrow as, you know, this woman that's, you know, sleeping with her sister's boyfriend, and to see how far this character has come is just fantastic. And of course, as I mentioned before, letting our girl Supergirl have a more central role, super happy.
Here we go. All right. Jess, what do you say?
All right. Well, I'm going to give my legend some love. My favorite scene was the Rebecca Silver book signing. Because Mick as Rebecca Silver is like literally the best thing that's ever happened. It just makes me laugh every time. I love it. And the worst, I'm kind of on board with everybody's worsts. Those were each of the low points for me. The Bebo, even though he wasn't real, which was a little bit of a higher point. So that was good. The Care Bear stare, which is a bit cheesy. There's a lot of cheese throughout this. Probably some of the stuff between Supergirl and Lex got pretty cheesy, which I just sort of gloss over and say, oh, that's Supergirl. So, you know, there's that.
Sorry.
Y'all know I'm not a big Supergirl fan. And what was the other worst one? Anyway, everybody's worst ones. I agree with all of that.
All right. I would say, I would say for me, Barry, the part of the best was Barry being able to piece all these things together. And with Oliver's help, I mean, I think back to all the different crossovers that we've had and how it started with Barry versus Oliver and how it's just grown from there and how they've counted on each other for the definition of their character and for their heroship and everything else and what that has built from. And so I enjoyed that journey through the Speed Force to bring all the pieces together. That to me was very symbolic of all the different crossovers that we've had. I think I've kind of noted the same worsts and all that. And I don't want to be negative about the future, but I'm a little bit worried about kind of what this merging means for all of our shows coming together. But that being said, I'll also say one of my absolute best was Kate on the couch with Alex and Kara sitting there. And I think those kind of moments are what I'm looking forward to moving forward as our shows go from here. So hopefully there'll be a whole lot more positive interaction like that throughout Earth Prime. So, and I'm glad that all of us are going to be around to talk about it. So, Cammy, you guys are taking on Green Arrow and the Canaries, right?
We sure are. We'll all be right. Following our heroes' children now, which definitely makes me feel old.
It's amazing what 8 years will bring.
Yeah.
All right, super. Yeah, let's go around and give our final ratings for the entire Crisis event. All right. Justina, what do you say?
8.5 memories bring us all together.
Very nice. Jeff?
7 super friends around a table.
Cammy?
6.75 hoods that we should have been using this entire time.
Jess?
7.5 rebirth.
And I will go 8. Lex winking at us because we know better. All right. Let's go around and tell everybody where we can be found if the folks don't know and they've just kind of wandered in. So, Jess, you guys are still not part of our GSM family. I don't know why, but tell everybody where they can hear you and Martin talk about Legends of Tomorrow.
Sure. You can find us on Tomorrow's Legends. We are part of the Cybercast Network. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, it's at Tomorrow's Legends with 1 R in Tomorrow. We also have a Facebook group. So
Nice. Jeff, we're not doing anything specifically Batwoman related, so tell everybody what you're up to these days.
Well, you can find me out there on Twitter at X-Force11. I will continue once Flash comes back doing Flashes from the Underground on Made of Steel. And I just finished up Castle Rock Season 2. We're still waiting for news about Season 3, but you can check that out as well in the podcast feeds.
All right. Cammy, where can we find you?
I'm Cammy and Ray on all social media sites, unfortunately. And I am also very happy to be one half of what will continue to be Arrow Squad as we follow these young whippersnappers into 2040.
Nice. Green Butterfly, where can we find us?
You can find us at Made of Steel, MAID. We're at Supergirl GSM on Twitter, and my personal account on Twitter is Justy1978, and I'm always talking about superheroes, so you can find me there, and you can find me every week hanging out with Silverbox and K-Vox.
That's right, and you can find me on Twitter at Silvervox1. All right, thanks so much, guys. It really means a lot that we can all come together and talk about this stuff and just have fun with it and take it seriously where it needs to be and just laugh where it needs to be. So, at the Care Bear stare. All right. So signing out. So Justina, you want to sign us out?
This is your Eye in the Sky, Green Butterfly. The universe might keep changing, but my relationships with my super friends never will.
Cammy?
This is Cammy, and on behalf of Arrow Squad, goodbye.
Jeff?
This is X-Force 11 signing off.
Yes.
And this is Harley Quinn, and I'm out.
I am John, a.k.a. Silvervox. She is Georgia, a.k.a. K-Vox. We'll see you guys at the next crossover. Oh, it'd be like that, huh?
In the end, there was only one. A single black infinitude. Then the infinitude found release. finally, the darkness broke, filling it with life. With the multiverse. Every existence multiplied by possibility. And spread out before space and time in infinite measure. Civilizations rose and fell. And rose again across reality's grasping expanse. Life, a precious gift, persevering in the face of every obstacle. Until, finally, the Age of Heroes was born.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.